Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed.
Everybody has questions that aren't being answered.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Been on a bit of a break. Been focusing on the news show. Been focusing on some MMA stuff, and actually recorded two episodes for the conspiracy show already this month, and we're only on the third day. I guess one of them was late last month, and then we got the other one done just last night. So I've got at least one more definitely coming out this month. But yeah, really, really trying to get back into it because it was so fun, and it lost a little bit of its shine to me. But I know there's a lot of you out there that still enjoy listening to some weird stuff. So in this episode, this isn't very weird stuff at all. This is actually Brandon Williams, who you guys are familiar with, onestupidfuck.com. He helps people basically combat the unlawful and very strange ways. This is me speaking. It's not him. I don't know all the terminology he uses. So for the record, you need to listen to how he says it. But a lot of you guys are familiar with his work. He helps people, you know, get out of, you know, some of these predatory lending things, and really focuses on teaching people how to become state nationals, right? This is what we were calling in the past, like sovereign citizens and all this stuff. He's got some incredible stuff going on. He just did a 2.0 course. I was honored that he came on my show first to talk about this. He hasn't been doing many podcasts lately. He really made the rounds after he initially got on the show a while ago. And 2 years later, he is doing huge things. He's blown up. A lot of people are realizing what he's doing. And everything he's doing is legit. It's fascinating stuff because it seems like stuff that's too good to be true. But you can go to his Instagram. And I actually should have had that pulled up here. Let me see real quick. Because this guy, literally, you need to check it out if you haven't heard. Everything that he does is really, really cool. You go to his Instagram, Brandon Joe Williams. You can type that in and it'll, or one.stupid.fuck. And it's obviously some irony that he's throwing out there, but it's just loads and loads of pictures of people that he's helped get their own cars, brand new cars, slightly used cars, like new cars. And this guy is helping these people basically make the down payment, it sounds like, and then that's all they got to pay. He's teaching people how to get diplomatic license plates, all kinds of stuff, right? It's very, very interesting, and definitely something I'm looking into. I actually just downloaded the 2.0 course myself, and I'm going to look into this. Now, he makes it clear you don't need to do the 1.0 course. He says that he's embarrassed by that, and he has completely just overhauled his work, and it's incredible, and he's proud of it now, and I'm happy that he came on here to talk about it. If you want to go to his website, onestupidfuck.com, very easy. You can get everything that you need there. He's got law cases. He's got all kinds of proof of his work. And it's hard for someone like me to describe what he does without him here to like kind of tell me what he's doing, because it's something that I haven't seen done much. He will admit that there are other people out there doing it, and he gives them credit for what they do. But I think that what he's doing is absolutely incredible. And every time I talk with the guy, I get excited about what he's doing in it. reinvigorates my interest in this stuff, because everyone hates the way that the government and big business and all these things, how they tax you, how they get you to pay more than what your property is worth, all this stuff, right? These interest rates end up killing us when you're paying a 30-year mortgage, or when you're paying a 5-year lease on a car, whatever you're doing. You're overpaying for all of that stuff, and he helps you get out of that overpayment. No one gets screwed over here. You know, it's all on the up and up. So I'm going to shut up. I'm going to let you listen to what he says. We go on for a little while. There was a recording interruption, but I splice these clips together. You'll just notice that later. But yeah, I just appreciate you guys that have stuck around during the kind of lull in activity for your Dangerous World podcast here. As you know, my job is keeping me busy. I'm loving my job. And the reason that I got into this show in the first place was I hated my job and I wanted a way out. And you guys all helped me do that, right? So I feel like I gotta continue doing this for the folks that really enjoy it. So thank you all. If you haven't already and you want to check out all the free episodes, because there's loads and loads of excellent content from the past, Dangerous World has a Patreon, patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. We have the website where we sell all kinds of cool t-shirts and some fun merch. That is dangerousworldpodcast.com. And the only sponsor for the show right now is Pure Pet Wellness, which you've heard of if you've been listening to Cunt. High quality CBD, human grade stuff for pets. I use it for my dogs all the time. They love the tincture when it's thunderstorming. They love the balm if they're sore. I got one of my old dogs. He's an old pit bull. Ironically, his name is Ghost as well as my co-host. And yeah, he's stiff all the time, but I throw some of this on him. It helps him out. So I encourage you to check that out. You can use promo code DWP for 20% off at checkout. And I get a little kickback on that. So it's a great way to support the show and to support one of our own. This guy had a conspiracy podcast, Nico. And yeah, just a good dude. And I recommend you guys check that out if you have not already. Let's roll into the show. Brandon Joe Williams, great dude. Fun guy to talk with. We drank some whiskey and talked about his incredible work. So enjoy the episode. And you might have missed it if you're into the MMA stuff that I do with my friends Jared and Alex. We got a new guy, Harry, that's jumping on every once in a while. If you're into that, I posted that right before this episode, so it might get lost in the shuffle there. But this is a conspiracy show, so figured I'd put this one after so you guys don't miss it. Next week, I'm having on my friend Cody Cruz. If you haven't heard of him, he has been on the show one time before. This was a while ago at this point. But he just released a book. He published a book. We're going to talk about that in the next episode. So just know that there is already one other episode recorded relating to conspiracy stuff. And I don't even know how to describe that episode. I'm just going to have to let you guys listen to it, because it was an incredible conversation, just like this one. And just fun. It's gotten me a lot more excited to talk to people again about this stuff that have an open mind and can have fun with it. So, like I said 5 minutes ago, I'm going to shut up. We're going to roll into this episode. Brandon Joe Williams, thanks for popping on if you're listening, man. And enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Dangerous World Podcast. Got a pretty fun show here for you, and I haven't been doing a ton lately. Outside of the news show, outside of the MMA stuff, we're just kind of, doing our thing over here slowly but surely. So this should be a great one to kind of get back into the swing of things. I'm trying to get back to doing weekly episodes, if not more than that. But it's easier said than done when you're busy. So I'm here with one stupid fuck, Brandon Williams. I'm excited to have you on, man. A lot's changed since we first spoke about 2 years ago, I want to say.
Yeah.
It seems like you're absolutely doing your thing. And, I got some funny stories to tell you, dude. Like after, we kind of get your intro out there for people that may not know you and stuff. Dude, you've been accused by listeners of mine that you're scamming people. And I can imagine that you get that a lot. This dude was wild. I'll tell you the full story. It was ridiculous. Like he didn't have any proof. He didn't have nothing. He was just kind of throwing out accusations. He also called me CIA. So kind of lets you know where he's coming from. So
sounds like a real winner.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's up with you, dude? Tell people who you are, what you do. It's fascinating stuff that you're up to, man.
Yeah. First and foremost, just to kind of answer what you just said, I didn't start getting a lot of haters until fairly recently. And all of a sudden, I got a whole bunch, which we can consider that to be a conspiracy or not. And the definition of whole bunch is really like six. But when they came onto the ship, I guess you could say, or when they came onto the, when they presented themselves on the various platforms, it was just like, oh, it just seemed like a lot. Because before that point, when I launched the first website, it was March 14th of 2022. And then when I launched the first course 1.0, that was July 2nd of 2022. So until maybe June or July of this year, I mean, getting a teeny little hater every once in a great blue moon was just so rare. I literally was like shocked. I would be going through weeks and weeks and weeks and just be like shocked. Like, I can't believe I don't have any haters. And then maybe around June, July of this year, we started getting a small handful. You know, I'm not even going to do them the justice of even talking about them right. as individuals. But they're you know, some of them I know and have gotten to know and have even secretly been investigating a couple of them just to make sure if they try anything too crazy, I'm definitely ready to spring some shit on them 1,000%. You know, litigation or libel or slander suits or whatever we have to do. And then obviously turn that into a PR campaign and just smear the shit out of them all over the internet. I'm super excited about that, super ready for that. So, you know, I've been doing a little digging myself and some investigation of some of the individuals that have come forward as really just psychotically attacking my brand. So I don't know if this particular individual that you've been experiencing might be on my list. I don't know. And I will tell you, I won't strike first. So if they want to strike first, you know, if you're on my list, trust me, I'm more than ready for you. That's
yeah,
the
you
first
don't
thing.
Seem like a guy that you want to fuck with, like, legally. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, I mean, you know, if we're throwing hands, I could take you. But if we're getting into a legal battle.
No, it's true. It's true.
Into a legal battle, I'm not touching that. So, yeah, God bless those people, man. How does it make you feel when people are hating on you? Because you seem like, you know, it doesn't seem like shit bothers you. But it's gotta fuck with you a little bit because, you know, you're putting a lot of effort into this. And it seems like you're coming from a genuine place. We've never met personally, but you know, you seem genuine to me. I've got a pretty good bullshit reader, I like to say. So, I mean, how does it make you feel when these people are kind of shitting on your work?
Well, it to me, it's funny because they start shitting on my work and then everyone just dogpiles on them. And the way that it always goes down is this dude isn't even charging for anything he's doing. He's giving away everything for free. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I don't need to do anything. I don't really defend myself because the thing is that the number one way that these haters attack anyone, whether it's a business guy or a sales guy, like someone like Grant Cardone, whether it's the number one thing they love to attack is the financial aspect. You know, oh, he's a guru. You know, he's scamming people out of their money. You know, like for example, like when people talk about David Strait, for example, who, you know, I don't have an opinion one way or the other on, but you know, he's scamming people, he's doing this, he's doing that, he's charging people. But the thing is that, you know, one of the reasons why I think maybe I have more haters, it's just none of them talk about it at all. It's because what the fuck are you gonna do to me? First off, my brand is onestupidfuck.com, which was designed on purpose from the beginning so that people can't attack me. I made myself cancel proof by canceling myself first.
Here it is. Glamour shot right there too.
That was kind of like my brainchild on that, because I'm like moving into a cancel culture world, and what do I do to prevent myself from being, see, I call myself horny, worthless, and racist right on my front screen. So, you know, it's one of those things where what the fuck are you going to do to me? I've already burned my house to the ground, bitch. You aren't going to do anything to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that was the first thing. And the second thing is I'm not charging. I don't have a membership fees. I don't have private membership fees. I don't even offer YouTube memberships. I don't have, I don't charge for any of my courses. All my courses are entirely free. All my research is free. My entire social media is basically just a research diary. And every time I come up with a new thing, or I have a thought, or I have a realization, or I come up with a definition, I post it on social media, and it's almost like a running record or diary of my research. And then my website, onestupidfuck.com, is a more cold and condensed and functional version of my research, which is all free. My State National Theory page is the size of an entire book. That's free. All my documents on www.theamnestycoalition.org, I create custom documents, custom trust indentures, explanatory statements. All my documentation is free. It's given away for free. So the haters don't, they find themselves just kind of spinning their wheels in the mud. They can't get any traction when it comes to me. So
sure.
I think if it wasn't for that, I'd probably have more haters. But I think just the functionality of the way I've set myself up, what are you going to do? You aren't going to do shit. So what do? They just scream these like completely asinine generalities into the air and pray that someone will listen. And most people are like, you're basically screaming like a fucking lunatic. This guy gives everything away for free. I've already seen a few of his videos. They're actually really cool. And then they're the ones who get fucking ousted pretty fast. Right. And that's, right. You know, so I don't really find that I need to defend myself. Why would you defend? It's like seeing like some demented legless dog that's like rolling in the mud and it's like totally psychotic and barely even see. And it's like barking at you. Do you want to run over to it and punch it in the fucking mouth? Like, no, like there's not a whole lot of like, okay, you just keep walking. Like there's not, why would I even stop at something like that? You know,
you're
what
saying
I mean?
There's no threat.
There's no, yeah. What? There's no threat. There's nothing they're going to do. They're not going to get any traction. I've set myself up to where they're not going to get any traction. So what, why, if I engage with them, they're the only one that benefits from that because now their name is on my shit and I have a lot of eyes on my shit. So now they're going to get some of the eyes that I have on my shit. So they're going to get the benefit of, you know, free fame, I guess you can call it, or whatever you want to call it. And then I get, what do I get? I don't engage. I just block them all because there's right. There's no point to engage. It's just a waste of time.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well said. I mean, your rise on social media has been insane, right? Over like the last couple years since we talked last. I want to say when we first spoke, man, you had like 3,000 people following you, maybe 4,000, something like that.
Probably. Yeah.
And I mean, you're up to, you know, five figures here on social media, which I mean, it means something when you get people following you. Now, we're mentioning a lot of free stuff here. We're mentioning like what you do. For those that don't know, what is it that you do? You know, there's definitely some new people that are not familiar with you here.
Yeah. So what I do is I do, you know, common law research as well as a lot of financial research. And then I'm what's called an attorney in fact. And at this point, especially since the last time I was on your show, we do a lot of litigation. So I have Williams and Williams lawfirm.com, and there's the current and previous litigation page. And you can go on there and you can see there's either links to the documents, there's links to the complaints, there's something there, or there's a link to what's called recap, which is where you can actually look at the entire docket. Docket just means, you know, everything filed into a case, essentially listed by number typically, right? And you can get in there and you can look at, like, for example, my American Express case, that one was very popular. You can actually download every single document in the entire case for free on what's called Recap or the Free Law Project. So I have links to that. And then
is this it here?
No, Williams and Williams Law Firm.com.
Perfect. We're not going to give any free plugs to any other assholes out here. Williams and Williams Law Firm.com.
And Perfect. That is it right there. And then Perfect. You can go to current and previous litigation on the middle right there. There it is. And you can scroll down and you can click on, like, if you go down to case four, you'll see those goofy lines. You just go down to the next goofy line and then case four, and then scroll to the kind of the bottom of that section, and it'll have a link. You can see most or all this docket for this case on recap. This is the entire docket. And if you scroll down, all those little blue buttons that say download PDF, that you click that button and it'll pull up, like right now, if you go to the top where it says complaint discovery, click the blue download PDF button right next to main document complaint discovery under document number one, just to the right of that, go down.
I am having a hard time. Okay.
Go to the right down, to the right of that one, to the right.
Complaint discovery.
Right. Right, just to the right of that, right there. Boom, click on that one.
Okay.
So this is the entire initial documentation that was filed on this case to get this case rolling. And you can go through the entire docket and you can download every single thing that myself or the representation of American Express filed into this case from the beginning all the way to, we're basically in the appeals court now. So what happened was, is when you file an appeal, it opens up an entirely separate case, but all the initial documentation that started the appeal is in the original case. So it sort of like begins inside of the original case, and then it kind of like moves or morphs into the appeals court, which has a different court number. But basically the whole point is that, what we do is I teach nationality and citizenship and taxation. I teach, you know, the whole driving versus traveling thing, which anyways, there's a lot more to it that no one ever talks about. And then I also teach what's called negotiable instruments versus money and the differences between, you know, the systems that we are operating inside of. But all my litigation is only an explicitly involving negotiable instruments at this time. And in the foreseeable future, we're not doing any litigation in any other area, really. Negotiable instruments and finances is pretty much where all my focus is right now.
Okay. So like you help people with these different situations. Can you give like an example or two, just because, like I said, it's fascinating stuff. And I know that you are probably limited on what you can say, but
I'm unlimited on what I can say. The only thing that I wouldn't say is just, you know, private information about my client specifically that they wouldn't want me to, that'd be the only thing I wouldn't feel comfortable saying, but I don't really see why we would even get into that conversation anyways.
Right. So yeah, sorry. We just had a hiccup there. This thing just stopped recording for some reason. I'll pull this up, your Instagram, because you've got a ton of pictures of people with their cars, right?
Yeah. So the original promissory note that is given to you where it says you unconditionally promise to pay X amount for X amount of months, that right there, that what we're looking at right there, that's a promissory note, right? Mm-hmm. That is actually what's called a negotiable instrument or a security, right? And the way in which you operate using that security is when you sign it and how you sign it. So if you look in the Uniform Commercial Code as to how promissory notes operate, it's actually not called a signature. It's actually called what's called an endorsement. Typically, you see the word endorsement spelled E-N-D-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-T. But the classic, more original spelling of the word, going back probably hundreds, if not thousands of years, is I-N-D-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-T. But both words mean basically the same thing. I like to use the I spelling myself because it's more of a purist spelling of the word. Now, the way that you sign that document is you're basically what's called the holder of the note. When it's slid across the table or when they send it to your email box, you become the holder. Now, the holder of the note is essentially the god of that note, meaning you are the judge, the jury, the executioner, you are the lord, you are the queen, the king, you are the law maker of that note while you are in possession of the note. So what happens is that people don't realize it, but what they're doing is they're signing in a way called a blank endorsement. Blank endorsement does not state the payee and does not state any conditions inside of the signature section. When you do that, what you're doing is you are relinquishing your rights as the holder to add conditions or payability or payees or anything else to that note. So what you're doing is you're basically giving up the value of that note for free without any conditions attached whatsoever. It's basically like, for example, this particular note here, I think the final number, they have those five boxes up mm-hmm. there. And then the one all the way on the right, I think that's the final number of all the interest over X amount of years. What's the final number? I can't quite see it here.
It says total sale price is $64,306.72.
So this document that we're looking at right now is essentially, if you look at your wallet, you have a Federal Reserve note. A Federal Reserve note is a promissory note between two parties. Party one is the creditor, which is Federal Reserve. Party two is United States, which is actually a corporation located in the District of Columbia. And we can get into all that. I think we did that last time I was on your show. Mm-hmm. So What's happening is that this document is actually has the same value in law as a $64,000 Federal Reserve note. If you look on a Federal Reserve note, there's two signatures. There's one for the Secretary of the Treasury, and there's one for, I forget the other party, but there's a couple signatures on there, right? So what you're doing is the Federal Reserve note is a bearer bond or a promissory note that's blank endorsed by the various parties that are on the note. You're doing the exact same thing when you sign a loan document. You're actually creating currency, okay? The way in which you sign, which actually means endorse, the way in which you endorse the instrument is the dependent aspect of everything that happens with that instrument. For example, there's something called a qualified endorsement. Qualified endorsement is when you write the term without recourse above or below your signature when you sign a document, a financial document. Without recourse means I'm never going to perform on this, and there's absolutely nothing you can fucking do about it.
Wow.
When they accept a qualified endorsement, it basically what that means is I'm never going to pay any of these payments, and there is not a fucking thing you can do about it. Now, most human beings, especially in America, where you know working and providing and exchanging for value is extremely important in the minds of a typical American, which is exactly true. They get angry about this when they initially contact my research and they say, it sounds like you're fucking over the dealership. You're fucking somebody over. Somebody's getting something for free. Nothing is truly free. That's all true. The thing is that when you sign that document and you promise to pay, you are creating a $64,000 promissory note. And then there's a section in law called 12 USC 412, which we're not going to pull up because it's just a lot of legal jargon. It's not really going to, you can look at it yourself or your, okay, your audience. 12 USC 412 is called application for notes, right? And what it says in there, if you read it very carefully, what it's saying is that there's this thing called the Federal Reserve Discount Window, which you can actually look that up. It has its own website and tons of information. You can actually even look up a list of every single bank or credit union in the entire country that has access to the Federal Reserve Discount Window. And you can also see all the people who have current petitions or applications to get the Federal Reserve Discount Window. Exactly. So this is the Federal Reserve Discount Window website. Now, what's happening is as per 12 USC 412, what the financing company does is they take that original note that you released. They take that note to what's called the Federal Reserve Discount Window, and they write an application for Federal Reserve notes. They collateralize the original note, the one that you signed, and they basically trade it for Federal Reserve notes. And then what they're doing is they're giving you your own notes back to you after those Federal Reserve notes come back from the Federal Reserve Discount Window. When you write something like without recourse, what people who are new to this information need to understand is that they've already been paid. If the vehicle is a $42,000 vehicle, but the promissory note is for $60,000 because it's for 6 or 7% interest over 5 or 6 years, they're not getting $42,000 back from the Federal Reserve Discount Window. They're getting a little bit less than $64,000 back from the Federal Reserve Discount Window. So even when the financial institution swaps that note and pays the dealership the $42,000 for your vehicle, at the end of the day, the dealership got paid their full amount. The banking institution just made $12,000 or $14,000 or maybe more, depending on the, I guess in that particular circumstance, it'd be like $18,000. And plus, you never need to make any payments. So the thing is that using a qualified endorsement of without recourse is actually completely ethical, even on the exchange end of the spectrum. What's not ethical is that right now what's happening is you're doing a blank endorsement on the original note, being told that you're being loaned money. You aren't being loaned anything. You are the one who created the value of the initial note, which is exchanged at the Federal Reserve Discount Window for Federal Reserve notes. You actually funded your own loan. They get the entire $64,000 up front. They pay the $42,000 to the dealership to pay for your car. They pocket the additional. So they made 20 grand on the deal right from the beginning. And then now you're paying an entire secondary $64,000 note, plus the vehicle itself is collateralized on the second note.
And that's based off like the interest rate and stuff that you're saying, right?
Yes. Now, when you claim the original, so the original note, if you look at 12 USC 412, it's called a collateral security. When you claim the value of the collateral security, meaning if you endorse it properly and claim the value of the collateral security, at that point, the car is no longer collateral on the quote unquote loan.
Oh.
So what you're doing is you're claiming the actual collateral. The actual collateral is not the home of your mortgage. It's not the car on your car loan. It's not any of these things. The actual collateral and the only collateral needed is the original unconditional promise to pay. Wow. That is the scam. This is the entire scam. This is a scam.
So you're saying that the governments and the establishments of the world are scamming us, and all that you're doing is you're basically making this a legitimate transaction.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So the thing is that what we're doing is we're writing up contract change agreements, and we're forcing the financial institutions to realize that they are the fiduciaries and they do have a responsibility. What is that responsibility? That responsibility is to safely and correctly and properly and legally take the original promissory note that was created in a car dealership, for example, take it to the Federal Reserve discount window, swap it for Federal Reserve notes, and then bring those notes back to us to disperse. We don't let them disperse the notes. We force them to bring all those notes back to us. We are going to be the ones to disperse those notes. Now, at that point, then we disperse the $42,000 for the car. We are going to pay the financial institution for the swap because they did provide a service. So we're going to give them a couple $1,000. And then we just made $14,000 profit by buying a car for free.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's wild that more people don't do this kind of stuff. Why do you think that is? Why do people stay away from this? Like, you know, law firms and things like that. Why don't they really do this kind of stuff?
I mean, I don't know. Law firms, I don't know. The real truth is, and I don't want to seem cocky or anything. I've been thinking about this information, studying this information, and digging through this information all day, every day, nonstop. I don't stop thinking about it. I mean, I dream about it. Probably for right around the same time you and I had our show, it's probably when I started to really focus in on the subject of negotiable instruments. So that would have been around November of 2022. So imagine total and complete obsession. Nonstop all day, just walking around thinking about definitions and role playing, court scenarios and just nonstop in your head all day, all night, every day for, you know, a year and a half. And then now we're getting into a lot of litigation and stuff like that. I think there's two answers to the question. Answer number one is just no one's ever gone this deep on this subject to understand it in this way and call every single law and put it all together into a little system. And the way I look at it is the way that I've culled everything and put it together is it's foolproof. The problem is that's the first part of the problem is lack of information and lack of collecting it together and putting it into a workable system, right? The second, I think, and more prominent answer to your question is that when you start doing this, the financing company comes and repos the car. They don't give a shit. They don't care to follow the law at all. These scammers obviously don't care because they're basically, you know, basically what we're looking at is brilliant in a way, because if the scam was smaller in scope, people would get upset about it. But right. When the scam gets so big and it's so outrageous and it's so crazy, people have it. There's like a breaking point, and people past that breaking point, they have a tendency to just sort of like either be confused or be in a daze or just not do anything about it. And it's actually when you start studying the people who are behind the curtain and a lot of the conspiracy and stuff, they operate using this information. They'll actually survey people and find out how would you feel about this or how would you feel about that? And they'll get these anger triggers. And then what they'll do is they'll figure out, okay, how do we take this issue or scam or problem and grow it into such a size that it just instantaneously overwhelms people to where they don't want to do or say anything about it, right? So what we're looking at is we're looking at a financial scam that's so big and so crazy and so wild and it's been going on for so long that people just, they've never really understood the scam. No one's ever understood the scam, right? That's the first issue. The second issue is they think they can do whatever they want. So what we're doing now, and this was a huge part of my research for a long time, is we have to move into litigation. If you're not comfortable filing a state case or filing a federal case, even if you don't know what you're doing, and I teach you all of this in my free Contract Killer course, the 2.0 version. The first section is about nationality and citizenship and taxation. The second section is about driving, traveling, and assets, such as the car, because you have to understand assets and trusts in order to understand the way that a car is structured in America. The third section is all about negotiable instruments. And then the fourth section is all about litigation, how to file litigation for free, how to structure a complaint, how to build evidence, how to do FOIA requests, okay? So this is a free course. And when I say free, I mean actually free, as you're aware of. So the thing is that is the missing piece. You have to be ready for them to completely and utterly negate the law completely. And then at that point, you have to be ready to move forward. You're going to be collecting evidence throughout this entire process. You're going to be making copies of the documentation. You're going to be writing maybe even like a little journal of what occurred when you went to the dealership. You want to have a little diary of your own of all the evidence that you're going to be collecting just in case something happens where you need to file litigation. Now, the cool thing about litigation is now your $60,000 car has now become a half a million, million, $2 million, $3 million lawsuit. So if you ask me, Brandon, would you rather have a $60,000 car or a $3 million lawsuit? I'm not a gambling man, but I'd rather have the lawsuit.
Well, I mean, I am a gambling man and I'd rather have the lawsuit. So
if you're a gambling man, this is what I teach is literally the greatest thing that anyone has ever presented to you, in my opinion, that I'll just say it. I won't even mince words. If you're a gambling man, what I have to offer literally for free is the greatest fucking thing you have ever had the pleasure to lay your eyes on. If you're a non-gambling man like me, I'm totally not a gambling man, but maybe I'm getting converted because I am having more fun doing this and it's more exciting and it's more brilliant and it's more incredible than anything I've ever done. I literally am not even kidding. I joke about this with my audience all the time. Litigation is literally like on par almost with like sex. And I always say the only thing above sex and litigation is motorcycles. I always tell my audience, it's like motorcycles is number one. I don't think that'll ever be, I don't think the crown will ever be knocked off that one. But number two and three, you know, litigation and sex are constantly fighting for position in my world. So it really can become that fun and that exciting and that amazing. And you're really just playing, a game, a tabletop game that's just as complex as Dungeons & Dragons or Warhammer 40,000, whatever the fuck it's called. You've got all these pieces and you got this board and you got to move all these things around and there's all this shit that happens. Magic the Gathering is another good example. People think that litigation's more complicated than these other games that we play. That's not true. The only part of it that's true is litigation has an emotional aspect to it that you don't typically see in any other game. If you were to imagine litigation in a way where you can remove the emotion from it, it's the same thing as playing fucking Dungeons and Dragons, bro. I'm telling you.
I just following rules, following a playbook.
Same shit. You're moving the pieces down the thing. You're knocking them back. They're knocking you back. It's like, you know, first down, 10 yards. It's all the same shit. The problem is that you enter in the emotional aspect to it. And that's where things get hairy and complicated. But we talk a lot about that in the course. We talk about that a lot in our private groups. How do we manage the emotional side of the game? And that's basically a huge part of our discussion. And I think that's also another thing that's very unique about what I do and what I teach and all of my followers is we talk a lot about that particular aspect. So hardly anyone's talking about litigation. And I mean, like literally no one, right? Of the very few people that are, they don't really talk a lot about the emotional side, which is the side that everyone's concerned about. They're not concerned about the procedure. They're concerned about the emotions, right? So what I did was I talk a lot about procedure. I talk a lot about law, and we talk a lot about the emotions. So we try to get all three aspects of that game, and we try to talk about those things a lot and figure out solutions to those problems and figure out ways to better defend ourselves, better position ourselves in the courtroom. How do we, you know, we trademark our own names. We do legal name change processes. We put all of our assets into private irrevocable trusts. We do a lot of things to protect ourselves and to bunker down and to put armor on and to upgrade our guns, upgrade our armor, upgrade our skills. And as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as most of the people who are involved in what I do is concerned, it's just a video game. We're just playing a video game.
Wow. That's awesome. I mean, with the emotional aspect, is it, and I don't want to make this sound like it's a greed thing, but you know, with the stock market, there is fear and there's greed that move that kind of stuff. Those are the like real potent emotions in people, it seems like. But fear is so much more potent than greed is, right? People will really act more out of fear than they will for greed. And maybe there's a different word for greed, but like when litigation is brought forward, it seems like one of the parties is fearful, right? Probably the person, the party being targeted would be fearful. What would that other side represent?
You know, it's for most people, and I don't think we've ever talked about this particular question. It's a very fascinating question. What I think is occurring in my group and in my platform and with my public, I guess you could say, it's not greed. Sure. And maybe there is some of that. I'm not defending my audience. They can do that themselves. But on a realistic level, like if I were to look at this and disconnect myself from the situation, which we've obviously become very good at because you have to do that a lot in litigation, what is the evaluation? I think the evaluation is more like this. We live in a world where through the banking establishment, owning simple things like a car or a home, I don't know if you just saw that promissory note that was just placed on the screen. That's a used fucking Subaru or something. It was $64,000 motherfucking dollars.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah.
And we have a guy who just bought a brand new Toyota Sequoia, $90,000 fucking dollars. So
as much as my fucking house was when I bought it.
So you ask yourself, you say, okay, it's the banking regime, the scammers, I guess you could say, they're creating a world just like what I forget who it was, George Washington or whoever, like where he said, where if the banks control everything, then the country that the people have built will wake up homeless, owning nothing, or whatever he says, right?
Sounds like a Jackson quote.
Maybe Jackson, right? So it's becoming harder and harder and harder and harder to acquire things, to do things, to travel. And it's already been hard for a while. We have things like federal income tax, state tax, FICA tax. There's, you know, they're trying to make carbon tax. If you breathe, it's tax. You know, they're trying to put in cameras into the street. And if you speed, you get a ticket for that. And then the parking is getting crazier. And you know, registration is outrageous. You know, I know people with $40,000 cars out here in California doing $600, $700, $800 registration for their vehicles. And then it costs another $200 or $300 to update your driver's license. And then there's, you know, 25% to 35%, 40% federal income tax. And then you have a state tax. And then in LA, you have a city tax of 1% above $100,000. It's just crazy. It's madness. And people are getting more and more and more and more irritated about it, especially since COVID, right? So I think there's a difference between greed and someone who hasn't eaten in 60 days and you put a plate and food in front of them and they eat with such voracity that they look like they are a unchained Wolverine from the forest.
Right.
There's a difference. That is a starved individual. A starved individual is not greedy. A starved individual is starving.
Maybe it's flipped around then. Maybe the people that are filing the litigation, maybe they're fearful for their future. And that's why it seems to work so well. They're fearful and they're going against a greedy party. And the greedy party isn't going to fight as hard because they're not fearful.
Well, what drives me and what drives a percentage of my audience, I don't know what percentage that would be. There's a lot of people who obviously just want to get a car at this point because the whole car thing has exploded recently.
Right.
There are people who want to release student loans. There are people who want to manage debts, who want to manage credit cards. But But they are overwhelmed by what they believe is a financial obligation of which they cannot discharge. It's like, it's actually honorable, right? Honorable people feel as though they have an obligation of something they've been given that they need to discharge. The problem is that this whole thing where they think they're being given what they think is money. First off, it's not money. It's actually securities. The Federal Reserve notes are actually just securities. They're not actually money. Money is defined as gold and silver coins, right? So we start getting into that conversation. What's the difference between money and negotiable instruments? So you think you've been loaned money. You weren't loaned anything. Right. You did a blank endorsement on the original promissory note, which was exchanged at the Federal Reserve discount window through what's called an OC-10 agreement. You can look that up. An OC-10 agreement is basically an agreement that a credit union or a bank has with the Federal Reserve. That's the agreement that gives them access to the Federal Reserve discount window. OC stands for operating circular, right? So because they have an OC-10 agreement with the Federal Reserve discount window, what they do is they're able to take this, yeah, right there, application form 3, OC-10 letter of agreement, right? So there's several different documents that you would fill out and send in order to get OC-10 agreement approved, right? And if you go to go to your URL box and mm-hmm. type in master account and services database. And then Federal Reserve discount window, master account and services database, mm-hmm. Federal Reserve discount window.
Let's see what we get.
Discount window. There it is. Master accounts and services database. So, on the left-hand side of the screen, you have database existing access and database requests for access. So if you click on database existing access, this is a list of every single banking institution in the country that has access to the Federal Reserve discount window. If you go up, you can do a search by name. And then you can also go to database requests for access on the left-hand side. These are banks or credit unions that have submitted. You can go down and you can see they've submitted a petition to get Federal Reserve discount window access. You can see there's three different tiers, tier one, tier two, and tier three. You can see the date in which they filed an application to get window access. You can see if it's currently approved, withdrawn, pending, etc. If it's been approved, you can see the date of approval for Federal Reserve discount window access. Now, what we're looking at, and by the way, anyone can open up a bank or a credit union, and you could do an OC-10 agreement yourself, open up your own bank, start swapping promissory notes at the Federal Reserve discount window, literally just yourself. Wow. You don't need to, you can create your own bank. I haven't done it yet. I don't know how difficult it is exactly, but I know it's not crazy, crazy hard. And basically, once you have Federal Reserve discount window access, once you understand negotiable instruments, negotiation, endorsements, you can essentially create infinite money legally.
Wow. That is incredible, man.
Yeah.
So you're saying that you haven't done this yet. Are you, is this something that you're thinking about researching more to actually educate people on how to do that?
Oh, yeah, I've read the OC-10 agreement. I know the laws associated with opening a credit union. Any 7 natural persons is actually the law on that can open up a credit union. I do intend on doing that. I would say I'll probably start walking down that road a lot more in 2025. My main concern was just getting litigation down, because the thing is that the problem that we're running into is we send all these things, we ask all these things, we get ignored. Pushed aside, ignored, get the cars repoed. They just don't care. So I was like, all right, if I don't learn how to enforce the law, I'm never going to get anywhere with anything. I'm just never going to get any fucking traction anywhere. Right. Sure. So I started going down the litigation path, and I wanted to sort of master that activity prior to going back into any sort of administrative activity, such as opening a bank or doing an OC-10, because I want to know that if I file an OC-10 and there's goofy shit, I can litigate, beat the fuck out of anybody I need, get them to perform on whatever it is they're supposed to be doing, and not feel like I put a bunch of work into something and then I get to the 40-yard line and then I'm just like fucked and there's nothing I can do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, man. It's just, and it is, it seems like, you know, obviously this takes a ton of effort and energy. Dude, you know, you were talking about definitions earlier, and I got this one. It popped in my head. It's kind of a sidestep from our discussion right here. But I live in this area called Picture Rocks, okay? It's a census-designated place. And where I'm getting at here, a census-designated place is like the counterpart. I'll pull this up here. Like it's not like an official city. It's not a town. It's not a village, right? An incorporated place would be the counterpart to a census designated place. So I'm wondering if laws apply different in these census designated places than they would in an incorporated place.
Yes. Do you have a police? Do you have police or just sheriff's office?
We have a sheriff.
Do you have police and sheriff or just sheriff?
I believe it's just a sheriff, and it's right down the street from me.
That would make perfect sense because the police only operate in incorporated places.
Okay.
Sheriff is original non-incorporated law enforcement. The police is the incorporated side of the law enforcement. So sheriff is an actual state constitutional peace officers, whereas police is a Washington, D.C. private security force.
Got it. So the sheriffs, yeah, and I've heard that before, that the sheriffs kind of work on behalf of the people, the police work on behalf of the government, supposedly, right?
If you want to go even a step farther, the police essentially operate more on what people, or I'm sorry, the sheriffs operate more on what people think the law enforcement should be operating off of, which is don't hurt people, don't steal or fuck up their property, and don't lie in your contracts, whether they be verbal or written. Don't be a liar. Don't be a cheat. Don't be stealing, and don't hurt people unnecessarily. That's basically the gist of what the sheriff essentially and the sheriff's office is essentially based off of, which is essentially just explaining common law in a sentence, right?
Sure.
The police is basically a private security force that operates on behalf of a private for-profit foreign corporation called United States, which is located in the District of Columbia, which if you want to pull up another tab, I can just show you guys that. You're going to type in UCC 9-307. And you're going to go down. You're going to click on that, location of debtor. Now, when they say location of debtor, they're referring to the two parties that are located on a Federal Reserve note. The creditor is the Federal Reserve and the debtor is United States. So 9-307 is saying, in relation to a Federal Reserve note, where is the location of the debtor, which is United States? You go down to subsection H and you'll get the answer to that question.
Yeah, it says the United States is located in the District of Columbia. So we're not in the United States. Me here being in Tucson, Arizona, Picture Rocks, Arizona, you being in California, you said?
That's correct.
We're not in the United States.
That's correct. But the problem is that what United States did is they opened up corporations called State of California and State of Arizona.
Right. Okay.
So State of Arizona is located in the District of Columbia, whereas Arizona is not.
So, yeah, like we're talking about like literal versus, you know, legal language, it sounds like, right?
Exactly. It's all made to be confusing on purpose, to confuse you, to confuse you of your identity, to confuse you of your location, to confuse you what money even is. We are essentially in a giant web of purposely developed confusion.
I mean, it makes sense because, yeah, you keep people confused. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to have enough energy or enough knowledge to fucking, you know, take care of themselves properly. But, you know, the reason I was asking you about that is, I mean, and you kind of answered it a little bit, but what kind of like, you know, taxation laws would apply in a census designated place versus, and maybe you don't know the answer to this. I just kind of threw this at you, but.
No, the answer is very simple. And it's the basis of my entire, basically like my entire first video and really the spinal cord of almost everything I do. If you go to another window, If you go to another tab and you're going to type in 8 space USC space 1101.
Okay.
And then you're going to open up Cornell. And then you're going to go down to subsection A23. You got to go like halfway down the whole page. Go down to Cornell.
It's a red one, right?
Oh, wait. What the fuck? Can I, let me share a screen. Can I share a screen?
Sure. Yeah, I got to give you permission, I guess. Let me
see.
Yeah,
give me permission.
You got to ask real nice.
Please. Right. Pretty please.
Let's see.
If not, then I'll.
No, I got you here. Here you go. You should have it there.
Sweet. So let's do USC 101 right here. And then we're going to go down to 23 right here. So this is the answer to your question, right? The term naturalization means the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. The word person here means an individual or an organization.
Okay.
So the answer to your question is that everything and everyone is located basically wherever people say it's located. If you say you're located in the unincorporated Arizona, of which has nothing to do with the incorporated zone called State of Arizona, if you've conferred that information upon yourself or upon any of your trusts, estates, partnerships, corporations, you know, because the definition of person means individual or an organization, then you can effectively move yourself or any corporate fiction, such as an estate or a trust or a corporation, anywhere by simply conferring the nationality of that thing upon you or that organization after birth by any means whatsoever. So the short version of the answer to your question is everything is located wherever you say it's located. For example, when you get a driver's license, you're stating under penalty of perjury that you are a resident of not Arizona.
State of Arizona.
Because in Arizona, you have the unalienable right to move around, to pursue happiness, to do all these various things, to travel, to do all these very things, right? When you confer the nationality of State of Arizona, which is located in the District of Columbia, you no longer have any of those rights, thus needing a license to drive. But that gets more complicated as well. If you go to 49 CFR 390.5T and you're going to look up the definition of the word driver. Driver is defined as... Driver means any person who operates any commercial motor vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, and then in some states on the state side, they've changed a lot of these definitions and they've merged the definition of the term motor vehicle and automobile. But in California, they haven't done that yet.
Real quick, while you're looking that up, by these institutions having a sign on the dotted line there that we live in the state of Arizona, are they kind of forcing our hand to commit perjury in a sense?
No, because the thing is that you, because of the definition of the word naturalization, you literally live literally wherever you say you live.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
If you confer the nationality of South Africa upon yourself after birth by any means whatsoever, you literally just naturalized into South Africa. You legally live in South Africa.
Wow. Okay. So if that was the case, if you did something like that, would you be subject to the normal taxation?
You would not. Absolutely not. No.
Wow. So that's a nice little...
If you don't know the difference between State of Arizona and Arizona, you can't make this determination.
Okay.
If you don't know the definition of naturalization, you also can't make that determination. So you have to understand the definitions and the laws. And when you do, you realize that you could move yourself all around the country a billion times all day long and all night long as much as you want. You could move yourself 400 times in a 6-hour period. The definition is conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. That could be spoken, it could be written, it could be, people, I always laugh whenever I do presentations because they're like, well, could it be this? Well, could it be this? And it's like, you know, and I always joke, I always say, well, shockingly, that would be included under by any means whatsoever. You know?
Yeah.
But it's just people just can't, it's just so much to try to understand. They just, people short circuit.
Yeah. I mean,
They're just
sense.
Like, how can this be? Right. But if you look at vehicle definitions from the DMV website in California, you'll see here, automobile is a passenger vehicle that does not transport persons for hire. A commercial vehicle is a vehicle which is used or maintained for the transportation of persons for hire, compensation, or profit, or design used or maintained primarily for the transportation of property. Mm. So the thing is that what people don't realize is when they say that they are a resident of state of Arizona, they no longer have the right to pursue happiness and travel. So what they're doing is, and because the foreign for-profit corporation called the United States, if you look at the Constitution, it says that the federal government will only have jurisdiction over commercial activities between the states. So what did they do? They made it a driver's license, which is a license to operate a commercial vehicle on the highways.
So how does that work? I mean, what you're saying makes sense, and I have heard this before, probably from you the first time that we talked. If you're like, let's say I'm driving myself to work, that would be for profit, right?
If you use the word drive, so we can go traveling. Even farther. We can go even farther, right? Well, I don't use driving versus traveling because, you know, you just, the cops and stuff get so fucking pissed off and it's just such a craziness, right? So okay. I don't get into the driving versus traveling thing too much. I just say I'm not driving. I think it's simpler. Shit.
Imagine some fraud involving a space vehicle. What the fuck?
Oh, yeah. I was trying to look for something, and I know there's going to be the naysayers are going to freak out when I pull this up. They're going to say, oh, this only applies to this one section. That's true. It does only apply to this one section. But the thing is that you're going to see the same stuff in other places, and it's just that it's very similar in definition. It's just that these definitions are by far my favorite definition. So this particular section does only apply to one particular thing, but like we saw in 49 CFR 390.5T, this is a lot more broad. So the thing is that I go over here to 18 USC 31 just to show what I consider to be a much more verbose and clear definition of some of these words. And I recommend that you go elsewhere to find other definitions and stuff. So I know I'm going to get the naysayers, but fuck them, right? Sure.
Right.
So the term motor vehicle means every description of carriage or other contrivance propelled or drawn by mechanical power and used for commercial purposes on the highways in the transportation of passengers and property or cargo. Now we go back to the California definition between automobile and commercial vehicle. We see kind of the same idea. I like 18 USC 31 because the definitions are just very, very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this definition and this definition are different, but I will go into a court of law and I will use this definition to describe this definition because I feel like this one does a better job of describing the same fucking thing.
Yeah, okay? Like you said, it's more clear.
Now look at this one. Subsection 10 goes even farther and actually gives us a definition of the term used for commercial purposes. Means the carriage of persons or property for any fare, fee, rate, charge, or other consideration, or directly or indirectly in connection with any business or other undertaking intended for profit. You aren't driving, you aren't in a commercial vehicle, and you are not in a motor vehicle. Motor vehicle would be a commercial vehicle. An automobile would be a completely different term.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And it even gets down to the fucking breakdown of the word, right? Like automobile, like that basically means like, you know, it's a, you know, person, a person is just using that almost for, like you said, travel. What is it? Travel?
Well, you can use other words. I know driving versus traveling just drives everybody fucking berserk and all the fucking haters come and the lawyers come and everybody starts fucking screaming in the comment section. So if you want to just avoid all that, it's fine. Just I'm not driving. Okay. What? So you got to think, if you say I am driving and I say I'm not driving in a court of law, which of those two individuals has to prove the claim?
Yeah, I would say the person that's saying that you were driving.
Precisely.
Right? Yeah.
So you don't need to tell them shit. Oh, you're driving. I ain't driving shit. You're in a motor vehicle. I definitely am. There is one thing I'm not in, your honor or officer, is a fucking motor vehicle. That's the one thing. I don't even have one. I don't own one. I don't even get in the goddamn things. So you say I'm driving. You say it's a motor vehicle. I'll see you in court. You now need to prove that. And the thing is, they can't fucking prove that.
Wow. They're
not in a fucking billion fucking years can they prove that. They can't prove that. They would need to have evidence that some box or some body for a human being is located in your vehicle. And then they would need to prove that you were in that moment transporting that person or body or box or item for compensation. If you were, let's say you had a box and you were being paid to transport that box from point A to point B. Let's say the box was in your car for 4 days. And you didn't actually transport that box until the fourth day. On day number 1, 2, and 3, you were not transporting that box for any fee, rate, charge, or other consideration. So you weren't fucking driving until the fourth day, and you were only driving between the hours of 2 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. And he has to prove all of this.
Well, so it's clear that police clearly don't know this. They can't possibly know this information.
They are so fucked, and that's why they get so pissed off. They get pissed off because when they start to realize this information, they know they are never going to be able to prosecute anybody for any of this shit ever again, and they just freak out. They get pissed.
You know, I asked you this last time we were talking too, but remind me, why do you use Cornell for your definitions?
They have a lot of clickable stuff that's really, really fast and beautiful. For example, used for commercial purposes. Let's say you found this definition and you read this anywhere else. You wouldn't know that used for commercial purposes has a special definition unless you scrolled down and maybe you saw it in subsection 10. If you didn't do that, you might say, interesting, there's a sub definition here. Click on that. It gives you the source. And it gives you the definition.
Got it. Yeah. What I was more getting at is like, are these definitions different on different?
No.
So like if you go to like Harvard Law, for example, the definitions are going to be the exact same ones.
Yes. The only difference is that the sub definitions and stuff that you'll find, like, for example, here we are in 49 CFR 390.5 T. If you were in, let's say, for example, another online, like the ECFR platform, which is cool. The ECFR platform, the text is smaller. It's not as nice to read. The background, I believe, if I remember correctly, is like more of a gray background rather than a white background. And then you'll see here, you would read this on ECFR and these terms would not be blue and underlined. So you might not know that person has a special definition, operates has a special definition, and commercial motor vehicle has a special definition. Now, let's say the officer says that you are operating a motor vehicle. Here is the definition of operates.
Yeah. Yeah, it says no motor carrier or intermodal equipment provider shall require or permit any person to operate, nor shall any person operate any motor vehicle or intermodal equipment declared and marked out of service until all repairs required by the out of service notice have been satisfactorily completed.
Now, obviously, without going any farther, you can see this definition is completely fucking insane. It's very simple, right? The cool thing about that, though, is you say to yourself, oh, I can never understand law. You don't need to. The fucking police officer is the one who has to prove that you're operating a vehicle. All you do is print this motherfucker off, put it on the table, put him on the fucking stand and say, bitch, you prove that I'm doing this. The guy can't even read the fucking thing. Fuck him. Then you motion the court and you say that the witness is incompetent, Your Honor. He can't even read a fucking definition out of 49 CFR. They dismiss the witness. You say there's no fucking witness. There's no crime. Case dismissed. Easiest fucking thing in the world. You don't need to know this stuff. All you got to do is force them to understand it. They can't fucking understand it. You're home free.
Now, how does this apply to like speeding and like breaking traffic laws?
Good luck. I'll see you in court, officer. I would try as hard as I can to get that shit videotaped, bro. That's going to be the funniest goddamn thing in the world. I'm not going to say shit. I'm not going to say anything. All I'm going to do is be like, okay, officer, how long have you been on the force? 18 years. Okay, you're a lieutenant. Oh, well, very. How decorated are you, officer? Do you have any accolades? Build them up. You know, I'm really impressed by your record, officer. Let me ask you a question. What is the definition of the word driver?
Okay.
You see that? Now we build them up, and then we just wrap cinder blocks around both their legs and we dump them in the fucking ocean.
So once he can't tell you these definitions, I mean, because he's probably going to say something like it's a person behind the wheel of a car.
Yes.
Right? Once they can't prove or once they can't provide these definitions, where do you go from there?
You've been an officer of the law. How many tickets have you written? How many of this have you done? How much of this? How confident do you feel in your ability to build it up? What's the definition of driver? What's the definition of motor vehicle? Do you know what CFR stands for? Do you know what USC stands for? You hit them with the dumbest shit that a fucking literal, like a burn victim, Down syndrome, you know, like could, you know, you hit them with the dumbest shit ever. And then you make it so obvious that they are so fucking incompetent that you get them dismissed as witnesses to the case.
Okay. Now, do you have to do this again in court? Do you have to ask the officer the same questions in court or just when you're there?
You're cross-examining the police officer. You can also go into discovery and you can do what's called a deposition, which is better than sex. For sure, better than sex. I've never done one. But what you're going to do is you can go on YouTube and you can type in police officer depositions and you can see lawyers doing exactly what I'm doing. And it's literally sex. What you're doing is you're placing them in front of a fucking hot light in some room and you're able to legally interrogate them under penalty of perjury, which is prison time for up to X amount of hours. I believe in a federal case, it's up to 8 hours.
Wow.
I would literally just humiliate them to the point of where they're having horrible thoughts about what they want to do to themselves when they get home for 8 solid hours.
I mean, that's crazy, man.
And then I would broadcast, and then I would take that videotape after the court case was completed, and I would get, you know, I don't know how the legal world works in terms of how you release that or if you can release that. I imagine it's public information. And then you can do an entire smear campaign online using that deposition video to destroy the whole police force, to destroy the entire police academy, the educational arms. You can rip an entire police force completely out of an area without even winning a lawsuit. Just the PR alone, just running a PR smear campaign based off of a deposition video. You don't need to win the case. Just the PR campaign and the deposition video alone, that police force is going to be gone. They're going to be wiped off the face of the earth. You don't need to win the goddamn court case. They're going to win anyways.
Huh. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, man. And is this stuff that you're covering in 2.0 or is this the older stuff?
Everything's in 2.0.
Everything's in 2.0.
How to file a lawsuit. You can even file a lawsuit, what's called in propria pauperis, which means in the person of or in the status of a pauper. I have a theory that it kind of lowers your status in the court a bit. I wouldn't recommend it if you can afford to do a lawsuit, but if you can't afford to do the lawsuit is free.
Okay.
It's like a little petition thing that you attach to the front of the lawsuit. And then the court has to look it over and make sure it's not like a complete pile of shit. And as long as it's not just you screaming for fucking 90 pages, but it's like actually like a real thing. And it's like you don't look like a psychopath, you know?
Right.
They from my experiences and a lot of people that I've talked to, they are pretty damn easy to get these approved in propria pauperis. So the thing is that even the financial end of filing a lawsuit, I went and tried to figure that out for all of my audience as well in order to make sure that anyone, no matter what your current financial situation is, there is absolutely no excuse as to why you can't file as many lawsuits as you like, as rapidly as you want. And the thing is that, you know, I teach you all the various codes that you're going to be using against, you know, police officers, that you're going to be using against banking institutions. Banking institutions are the easiest one because you can go and you can look up all my cases and you can literally see everything I've ever done for free. So the learning on if you want to go after a bank or a credit union, that's the easiest in my opinion, because the maximum amount of information is available to you for free. If you wanted to go after, let's say, police officers or other areas, or even someone who harmed you or harmed your family or stole from you or whatever, you know, you can go on what's called PACER, and you can just, I teach you in one of the course videos how to actually look up cases that may be associated with the kind of thing that you're trying to file. And you can look up other cases that were successful and unsuccessful, and you can do like a little research thing, and you can find all the different aspects that you can use to make a strong case to win your case with whatever claims you're looking to put forward. Now, the whole point of this, just to be clear, we have a lot of police officers and stuff that are involved in my shit, that are involved in my audience. We are not anti-police. We are not anti-government. What we are is that the law is here for everyone. And if an individual feels as though there is a police interaction that is not correct, everyone deserves and has the rights to the courts to structure and make a complaint to try to get what is called relief. That's the word that's used in the court system, relief. So you feel like something has been happened to you that is wrong. You are entitled to relief. If you go into a court and you file a lawsuit and it's just some dumb bullshit, it's never going to go anywhere, right? So my contention and my idea is that everyone has the right and deserves to have the basic information to at least put forth a claim for relief. Now, what happens with that is going to occur in the courts and going to occur with you and how well you press your claims. But everyone deserves to know and to have the basic information and knowledge to at least press forth their claims and to make at least to make a police officer's life very stressful for a while and put him in a deposition. Even if you don't win the case, if you feel like it's wrong, even if you don't win the case, the guy got deposed, his life was hell for a while. He didn't know what was going on. He was very confused. At least from that point forward, now all the other cops are going to know if you fuck with this guy or this lady, they're going to become your worst nightmare for the next couple of years. So you have to make a decision. Do you want to do that again? Right. Mm. So you don't necessarily need to even win a case to get justice.
Sure.
That's the other thing. Right. So it comes down to confidence. It comes down to you should be able to travel through the roadways or drive if you're transporting persons or property for any fee rate charge or other consideration. You should be able to do both of those things without the feeling of oppression from any group or person.
Sure. So the people that apply to these what we think is traditional laws, like, you know, if you're speeding, if you run a stop sign, the people that apply to that would be like cab drivers.
Precisely. Speed limits only apply to people that are actively transporting property, cargo, or persons for some sort of fee, rate, charge, or other consideration specifically, right, and only on the highways. So even if you were transporting cargo, persons, or property on local roads, you still would not have to abide by speed limit signs.
Got
only
it.
On the highways.
Okay. Yeah, man. I mean, that's interesting. And you talk about the cops that are signed up for your course too. I'm sure that a lot of these guys aren't pulling people over on the street and doing dumb shit like that because they're realizing
there's a lot of cops that are also unhappy with a lot of what they see in the country. There's a lot of them. And yeah. I don't talk about them and I don't name them because I don't want to put them in a precarious situation. I let them come out as much as they want to publicly. And I let, you know, there's huge politicians that have contacted me. Heads of state have contacted me. I don't talk about any of that. That's all private information. And those sure. individuals are free to, you know, say what they want to say when they're ready to say. I don't want to use that information in a way to attempt to try to gain clout for myself at possibly the detriment of the other individual. You know,
no, yeah, that makes sense, man. It's like, you know, client, you know, privilege or whatever they call it, right?
Exactly.
But, I mean, not that that they're necessarily clients, but do you have a lean on this election? Like, do you see elections as anything that
you have to be a U.S. citizen in order to vote for the election? A U.S. citizen is an employee of the government. So you have to be basically what elections are is it's basically all of the employees of the government voting in the next CEO. That's all it is.
CEO, yeah.
That's okay. All it is. The thing is, I'm not a U.S. citizen, so I can't have a say in the corporate structure of a foreign government. I don't have the right. It's like, oh, Brandon, what do you think about some French company and they're doing some sort of internal voting on who the next CEO is? I don't care. It's irrelevant.
So you don't care one way or the other what happened? I mean, because the reason I'm asking is like, sure, you're not a citizen, but you could have an opinion still. If it doesn't matter to you or to your work, then I think that says enough, you know, like that you don't have to have an opinion, but I assume that you would have. You just don't.
It's completely irrelevant. If you look at the definition of a foreign government in 18 USC 11, it's any group that is at peace. And it literally says right in the definition, irrespective of recognition by the United States.
Okay.
So as long as if you have any group or any function, so I have my own nation, because the thing is that a nation, when you start getting into what is a nation and how is a nation legally structured and everything else, you start to realize how that all works. And then you realize what's a foreign government in relation to the United States and how does that work? And then you go down the peace rabbit hole. What does peace mean legally? Right. And you come out the other end and basically you can create your own nation tomorrow. Today, it's the easiest thing in the world. Mine's called the Nation of the Amnesty Coalition. We have our own coat of arms, right?
Oh, that's what that flag is behind you.
Yeah. So we have a covenant, right? This covenant is attached to all the passport applications that we do with the Department of State in the United States of America, right? And then I have a resources and documents section. This is where I give away all of my documents and resources. We have diplomatic automobile plates that we get printed. You can see those on my Instagram.
So there's other people that are a part of your nation.
I don't know, tens of thousands of people, maybe even more than tens of thousands of people. Oh yeah. This is huge, man. We got a huge operation.
That's nuts.
I would say tens of thousands currently, going to be hundreds of thousands here real soon. I think there's hundreds of thousands more on the fringe of what I do, and they're kind of looking at it. And I think there's, tens of thousands that are actively involved very heavily, right? So this is my car, and this is the new plates that we just had done. So we get what's called a private motor carrier DOT number, which is a special number you can get from the federal government for non-commercial automobiles. To get a private motor carrier DOT number is absolutely free, and it's about a 2 to 3 hour application that you will fill out over the internet. It requires no money. It requires no credit card, and it's free forever for life. And you only need one number for all non-commercial vehicles or automobiles.
Okay.
So my motorcycle has the same number, 404-3625. Motorcycle.
I was going to say, you're not worried about putting that out there, the license plate?
No.
There's no reason to be?
No, because you can go to DOT number lookup. You don't need to be a police officer to look up DOT Safer Web Company Snapshot, 404-3625 search, and then here's all my information.
Oh. So, yeah, it's just why are people paranoid about putting their license plate number out there, though? They just don't understand?
Well, a license plate number, a normal license plate number is totally different than what I'm showing you.
Okay. How so?
If I wanted to, let's say I got your license plate number, I could go to the DMV and I could pay like $5 in California, but I can get a full printout of the entire vehicle history of your vehicle. Because your vehicle, basically, when your vehicle is registered through the state and you have registration and you've got a certificate of title, what it is basically you are a government employee and you've donated that vehicle to the state in order to operate that vehicle commercially in that state. So what's happening is that you, when you get a certificate of title and you pay registration and you do all these things, you are basically, you no longer own the vehicle. And since everything involving the federal government is supposed to be public, that means that everything involving that vehicle, which is a government automobile, it's a government motor vehicle at that point, is public information.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's fucking fascinating, man. I saw a long time ago. I mean, it's not that long ago, but when you got your passport.
Yes.
What was that about exactly? Because that to me, the whole idea of a passport doesn't make sense in the first place, right? Like if you want to fly out of the country, I don't really understand it. And now I'm dumb when it comes to all this stuff. But why did you go the route that you did? How does it benefit you? How does it benefit like the thousands of people that you've helped? Like what does that particular passport do versus the normal one?
So what you're doing is you're clarifying that you're not a U.S. citizen and you're not in the District of Columbia. And when you clarify that, you regain your state's constitution, and you also regain the U.S. Constitution. You regain the Second Amendment. You regain all of your rights in law, right? So with the Department of State, what you're doing is you're just clarifying where exactly you are, where exactly you were born, your naturalization. You're clarifying all these things through the passport process, essentially. And
That's
yes, you're right. You don't
wild.
need a passport. I mean, I've even seen old generals in the military from the 1800s talking about how the passport is unconstitutional. The passport is unconstitutional. It's only possible to have a passport system as long as the country continues to be at the brink of war, under war, or under some sort of risk of war, which is why they have to constantly create friction internationally. If there's no friction internationally, then there's no legal justification to have a system like the
Sure.
passport
It
system,
makes a
right?
lot of sense now that you say it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Dude, real quick, do you have any of those flags for sale?
Yeah, I have a whole merch store. I'll show it to you. The merch
I want
store
to
is
see.
fucking hilarious, actually. You're gonna laugh your ass off. Check this
Dude,
out.
I love that. I was looking at it and I wanted to ask, but I was like, no, maybe it's like his grandpa's or something, something like real close to your heart there. Obviously it is now, I realize. All right, what do we got? What do we got? That hat's dope.
This is the merch store, right? And if you go in, the descriptions of the items are particularly hilarious. Like the hat is just fucking hilarious, right? So be the biggest cocksucking piece of shit in the room with this horrific abomination of a hat. Show off my gloriously tight ass everywhere you go and show off how proud you are to have learned about law from some childish retard on the
That's
internet.
epic, dude. That is so good. I noticed too when you go on to your website homepage and you just chill there for like 30 seconds, it's like, get the fuck out of here or do something,
Yeah.
like it's like I'm gonna start charging your ass rent if you don't fucking click on something.
Yeah, so we got a fanny pack. We got swimming trunks. This is no
Fanny pack
longer
solid.
available. Cum towel, right?
I love that.
Coffee mug is my favorite description. Check this out. This is my favorite one. We all know those days when you're about 1 hour into work and would love nothing more than to pull out a shiny 45 caliber. Put it in your mouth and pull the trigger. Don't fret. I got you, boy. This mug is so fucking badass that people won't even notice that your cup is full of about 18% coffee and 82% whiskey. Secretly, you and I will know that your ratio of coffee to whiskey is just right.
Yeah, dude, that's epic, man.
But
That's great.
if you go down on here, you can see we've got two flags. We have this one, which is like a Where's Waldo themed with all the pickles.
Okay.
This one here is the first flag I developed for the Nation of the Amnesty Coalition. I wanted a Where's Waldo themed flag that went with my main logo. You can see the main logo is right here.
Yep.
And then I expanded it out to be a whole Where's Waldo kind of a thing, right? And
Now, what the
then,
fuck is the pickle thing? Where does that come from?
so the pickle thing is in the first version of the course, version 1.0. One of the things I kept saying during the course, and I was never meant for this to turn into the whole brand. Was I kept saying in the course, if you don't understand any of this shit, don't fucking text me, don't fucking call me. Go down to the farmer's market, get yourself the biggest, girthiest cucumber you can possibly find, and sit on it, you stupid fuck. Don't fucking call me.
Okay.
I say that like two or three times throughout the course, and it just, I said a whole bunch of stupid shit. I said, there was one part of the course where I said, like, I was talking about lawyers and how lawyers are officers of the court and how they're sucking off everybody else in the court, like circus seals, and I do this, like, and my headphones fall off during the video. So there's a bunch of stupid shit that I said during the courses, but for whatever reason, the cucumber thing and sitting on a cucumber and sit and spin, you dumb bitch, and like all that whole thing, the audience just fucking went berserk. Everyone was talking about cucumbers and pickles, and I got messages every fucking day. You stupid fucking pickle. Sit on a fucking cucumber, you stupid fuck. People were commenting to each other. So I said, well, shit, this is obviously the culture of what is brewing here. Right. So that's when I turned myself into a cucumber. So that's where, so if you look at
cucumber, not a pickle.
Well, it's both. And the reason why is because I knew I wanted it to be knobby as fuck.
Right.
I had to be knobby. I knew that was like, I had to be knobby. It can't be non-knobby. Right. And everybody's like, cucumbers don't have knobs. Only pickles do. And I was like, fuck. So I just, it's kind of both really.
Okay. So it's an androgynous cucumber.
It's half pickle, half cucumber.
Little hermaphrodite thing.
Kind of both. Here's the second version of the logo here. Yeah, I made him have I kept making the artist make his dick bigger. It was the funniest fucking thing. We went through like four dick enlargements on the fucking right. And then we have
I gotta see the flag. How much is that flag?
And then one more I wanted to show you here. This is the third version of the logo right here.
Oh, nice. Where are we at?
And then this is the flag right here.
Oh yeah. $42. That's not bad for that.
And then we have a towel as well. And then we have a pint glass as well.
Where did the dogs come from?
So the dogs come from, and I have the whole story behind all of it.
I was going to say, explain it to me, man. I love stories behind logos like that.
Yeah. So if you go down to my question and answers page, you can see here, you know, what is the coat of arms and what does it mean? I had a buddy of mine. I still do. And he has this dog named Baloo, and Baloo used to hang out with us all the time. And this is him right here. And he's just a pure love. He's getting really old now. He's getting blind and he's kind of deaf and blind. He's definitely on his way out for sure. Oh. But he's just a ball of just complete love. And he's my best friend. We were like, every time I came home, cause I live with my buddy, every time I came home, he would just come with me and we would just be inseparable for years. And, I just like the bulldog. I like the way it looks too. So it's kind of all that combined.
And you've got a snake in there.
Yeah. So the whole snake dove thing that comes from a Bible quote. I'm not a Christian, but when you start studying the law, you can't help but get into a lot when it comes to the Bible, because it's just, they're married together. So there's a quote from Matthew. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves.
Mm.
And that's the quote behind.
It's a great quote.
And then the pickle, obviously, that's right. That's our. And then the dove, the serpent, and then the English bulldogs. And then this is a Latin term that is every word deserves a clear definition.
Oh, sick. And what about the colors? Usually coat of arms have like a color, like the colors mean shit. What put the colors here?
Nothing.
Just colors you liked.
Yeah. I had a designer. We did a bunch of designs and this one came out and I was like, I think it's super cool because it's like, it's a very classic look, but with modern colors and lines. And I've just never seen anything like it. And I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It caught my eye as soon as you popped up here on the screen, but I didn't want to ask about it. So
yeah,
that's great, man. I mean, it's crazy how you fuck around so much with this and you make it seem to where no one could possibly take it serious, but you're actually getting shit done. And so people can't not take you serious at this point. Was that the goal to where, you know, you're going to go in there, you're going to act stupid, say crazy shit. Whoever follows. If you don't follow, you know, you're kind of fucking yourself. Was that the intention from the beginning, or did you just kind of fall into that character?
Yeah. I've been in marketing and sales most of my life and I made a lot of money. And if I had to make something like the law guy again in my life, I was literally going to lay down on train tracks with a whiskey bottle. Hey. And I just, I think the whole brand is just rebellion against being stuck in such a, when I finally had my own brand, it's like, okay, you don't have somebody else you have to go to and get everything approved. And they're like, oh, that'll offend people. And they're being little bitches all day long. Now it's like, I can do literally anything I want. I think it was that freedom and the rebellion against the whitewashed fucking world and the cancel culture world. And I think it was just the biggest fuck you to all of that. I was just, you know, it's just, I guess it's a 12 years of infuriation.
Well, guys, that was quite a bit for a free portion. There's actually about an hour in addition to this over there at patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. If you're new or if you forgot or whatever, I usually give out quite a bit for free, and then we like to put a little bit of the good stuff behind the paywall. So head over there, support the show if you choose, and thank you so much for listening. Big shout out to Brandon Williams. Thanks again for coming on, man.